powered from the Sereno Cigar Company Studios in North Carolina and broadcasting from the Ventura Cigar Company Studios in California. It's episode 105 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, we welcome the one and only Rafael Nodel of Tabacalera USA and Boutique Blends as our special guest. We'll talk cigars, music, and industry talk. And as always, Primetime is brought to you by Saga Cigars, makers of the Saga Golden Age cigar. The Golden Age is a cigar that takes you back to the classic days of cigar smoking. Through six generations of experience by the Reyes family, the Saga Golden Age delivers a timeless blend that uses the nobility of the tobacco to bring you the perfect balance of power and flavor. It narrates better than words the history of a family's tradition in tobacco, delivering a cigar much like the ones they used to smoke during the times of Hemingway. Saga Golden Age is a full-bodied, full-flavored Dominican Puro. With tobaccos from one farm, the blend features a Corojo 2006 wrapper and filler from the original Cuban seeds grown in the Dominican Republic. Available in four sizes at an affordable price, Saga Golden Age is sure to please and bring you back on a journey to yesteryear. And by Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars have been experts in everything tobacco, including offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Villiger's Lorenzador, which translates to the Victor, is the first ever full-bodied Villiger cigar, and it carries a special meaning to Villiger chairman of the board, Heinrich Villiger. The Lorenzador represents the Mr. Villiger, the arrival of Villiger cigars to the premium handmade cigar segment. It was in time, in his opinion, to push the envelope and create a legacy cigar that will serve as a proper follow-up to the highly acclaimed Villiger La Floridian Clan brand. This Nicaraguan Puro was wrapped in a beautiful Nicaraguan Habano Oscuro wrapper, boasting a full-bodied smoking experience featuring seasoned, hearty flavors. Be sure to ask your retailer for La Vencedora, and you can visit Villiger's entire line of premium cigars at www.villigercigars.com. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And this live stream is brought to you exclusively by Drew Estate Tobacco Company. Welcome, everybody, to episode 105 of the Primetime Show for this Thursday, August 8th, 2019. This is Will Cooper here. I am in the Sereno Cigar Company studios. I'm joined cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How you doing tonight, Will?
I'm sorry I had to pull you away from preseason football. I'm very sorry about that.
Yeah, all you had to do was say, hey, you want to do this? I'm like, all right.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's been an interesting week, to say the least. It just flew by. I just can't believe it was like, yeah. It was Sunday the other day. I just looked.
Yeah, it seems to be a fairly quick week, which is, it was nice sometimes.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's one of those other things too. Like, I think when you get older, I remember just getting through a day and like, grammar school was like took like an eternity.
Now you get to 3 o'clock.
You get to 3 o'clock, right? right. But we have a great show tonight. I want to introduce our special guest from the beaches in Miami, making his primetime debut, Mr. Rafael Nodel. Rafael.
Hey, hi guys. Hi, Will and Aaron. Thank you for having me here. It's a real pleasure. I will not have been watching football, but I will have been sitting on the beach drinking and smoking. But I'm doing that here, so thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
So, Rafael, you have like two places in Miami, right? You have your house, but then you head out to the beach, I guess, in the summertime, right?
Yeah. This is a place that I can smoke a little bit more quiet, things like that, you know?
Yeah. There's nothing like, in my opinion, smoking on the beach and smoking in the desert. They both have their pluses.
Absolutely. And I know you did that this year on the way to the show. So, yeah, I follow your journey.
Yeah. I didn't drive there this year, but I did go to the desert. And I missed the earthquake by one day because I was actually in the area where the earthquake hit in California.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, that we don't have, although we have a hurricane season right now, but it's never like earthquake, you know?
Yeah. I hear you. Cause I mean, we haven't had hurricanes like Florida, but I remember a few years ago when everyone was leaving Miami for the one hurricane that came through.
Right. Although I must tell you that I knew that it was not coming here. I've been doing this for about 16 years. In May 31st, June 1st, I get into the water. If it's cold, that means that it's not going to pass through here. If it's hot at the time, that means it is only get hotter. And it's funny because my boss, Javier Estades, we were talking about that, and he evacuated. And I say, no, don't do it. And, well, we were writing this on the internet. It was the most massive evacuation of Florida, about 7 million people, you know?
Yeah.
But it didn't come to my door, so that's good.
Yeah. No, I know we got hit a couple of years ago, the hurricane. We had a show, I remember, Aaron. I think it was Willie we had on that. We couldn't get him because of the hurricane because they all had to leave. Mm-hmm. And I think on top of that, he had just like had a same-day surgery or something like that. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so – but I remember – yeah, I remember we had a struggle to find a guest that night, and we ended up getting Nate from Tennessee. So, so that worked out well. But, no, thanks again, Raphael. I know you're very busy. I know this is your evenings, and we do appreciate it as well.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Raphael, what we always like to start off with, we'll kind of cover your journey first, but we want to start before you even started working in the cigar industry. Let's just put that aside. How did you first get into smoking cigars?
I have to tell you, a guy by the name of Nick Perdomo is responsible solely for that. At the time, I was working on the hospital industry, and one of my employees, now my partner, Hank Bischoff, told me, hey, are you Cuban, so you smoke cigars? And I said, no. You know, they think, Americans think that all Cubans smoke cigars and roast pigs and things like that. I don't. I do dance, but that's about it. And so I went to, with Hank, I went to Little Havana. Nick had a place there, and I bought my first box of cigars. I smoked that cigar right there with Nick, my first cigar, with Nick Perdomo. And I went that evening to my house, and I told my wife, I am going to be on the cigar business. That's how... I was just blown away by Nick Perdomo's ability to get you to love cigars, and it ended up that my wife's family had been growing tobacco, which I didn't know, had grown tobacco for about three generations before that. So it, wow. You know, everything together in a circle.
How did that go over when you told her, hey, I want to make cigars?
Well, I have to tell you, the fathers and their uncles worked very, very hard on the farms. They came from Cuba. They were from Pinar del Rio originally. They came from Cuba. They lost everything after the revolution. Moved to Tampa because of the Oliva tobacco growers helped them to resettle in Tampa. And then he distributed La Aurora before Miami Cigar. He was distributing that. So she remembered always very difficult times and things like that. So it was not something that she was immediately drawn to. But she's a fantastic wife and allowed me to pursue my dreams, you know.
That's great. That's great to hear. So you did pursue that. How did that all start? How did you get into the business to begin with?
So we started selling on the internet. Hank and I created an internet site, AvilaCigars.com, because I'm from Ciego de Avila. And so I created that. I started selling cigars. I met a lot of the manufacturers, Ernesto Perez Carrillos, Puros Indios at the time was very strong, the Padrons, all these people. And I was selling their cigars. And I met the people from Olivero Cigars, and I started selling Oliveros. At the time, Olivero was making mostly flavor cigars. And so we started selling Oliveros, and all of a sudden, they asked us to be their consultant as they wanted to move into the outside from the flavors and to the regular cigars. So we made our first our first non-flavor cigar with Nick Perdomo, which is the only guy that got me into the business. And then and from there on, we bought Oliveros. Then we opened a factory, and that's where the journey started. Yeah,
you struggled though. It was not easy. Oliveros. You were making really good cigars, by the way. I remember that's when we first met about 10 years ago.
That's
great cigars, but it wasn't easy back then with those Oliveros days.
It wasn't easy. And that's what I think it drove me more and more. Because, you know, I have been on the hospital business. I started cleaning floors, and I did make it into the to the director of finance. I made it in the business side, and I was doing very well. And this for me was the one thing that I was not succeeding, and it was very hard. So I did not want to leave it like that, and I struggled. And because I thought, you know, you're right. We met when I was making the Oliveros Excel for Men, remember?
Yep.
And some of the others. But the thing is, there's a lot more to the business of cigar than just making a good cigar. Then you have the consistency, buying the tobacco, and I didn't know the business size. And that was a difficult. I was trying to compete with the big, massive companies, and I didn't have the capital, didn't have the resources. All I had was me, Hank, and our dream and tenacity to continue. But it was extremely difficult, that's for sure.
No, and I remember when you would come up to Charlotte. This is 10 years ago. You'd come up with Scott Weeks and
we were
all loving the cigars. I mean, we were seeing something like this guy's onto something. But it was a little bit after that, I think, that there was something that really went your way. And I think it was when you started connecting with Ho Chi Blanco and started to access his tobacco. How did that all come about? How did you hook up with Ho Chi?
That's correct. With Hank and I established a relationship with Ho Chi. It's a friendship. At the time, we were making most of our cigars in Nicaragua. And we were struggling. We were not making. So we were making some cigars in Nicaragua, some in our factory in Dominican. But things were not going our way. I knew that I wanted to get away from the flavor cigars, but that was something that the Oliveros brand was known for. And I think that was very difficult to get out of that. Then the relationship and friendship that we established, because, cigar business is really about friendship, right? It's really about connecting with people. The consumer, you guys, is a very intimate business. And we created that relationship, and then we thought, hey, let's work, and we created the SWAC. It was our first release, and it was I'm happy to see Aaron having the SWAC Salvage that it was. Yes,
what a great cigar that was!
Cigar, right? But we made some mistakes on that as well. And then when we were creating the SWAC with Ho Chi, we came out about a blend that we just didn't have enough cigars. And then the following year for the IPCP Art Show, at the time was called the RTDA, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And we didn't have anything to release, but we had that small batch blend, and we released it under the Aging Room brand, M356, which Aaron also has an Aging Room M356 too. He really went deep to the history. That's and right. Had these two blends. And we released that Aging Room, a small batch that we have prepared with Ho Chi. We were working on the SWAC blend, and that changed everything. We got excellent ratings, and then we discovered, right, that until now I have been making cigars, trying to make everybody happy, trying to make cigars miles. If the group of people were smoking miles, if the group of people were smoking medium to full. And then, since things were not going very well, we started making cigars that we like. And we said, listen, if we cannot sell it, we probably will not be able to sell it. We cannot smoke it. And that's it. And that changed your life, because as soon, and I swear, this is amazing. As soon as we started doing that, like, listen, this is going down. Let's just have fun, right? And as soon as we started doing that, things started changing. And amazing. So God works in mysterious ways. That's for sure.
Totally agree. And it was like, I just remember that whole Aging Room thing coming up. It got the rating. And then you followed up with the Quattro, which hits number two, but it's number one in the free world because the Monte Cristo number two gets it.
Number two, that's it, became the number one, and again, that was a follow up to the Aging Room M356, and that year the M356 had been the number 14 of the year. Then this one was the number two, which effectively was the highest one that year. So definitely start changing. But even good moments like that, then you realize you don't have money, right? You don't have money to make the boxes. You don't have money to make all these things. And you make a decision. And I have to tell you, I have learned from other people that came before us that publicly had mentioned that they made a mistake of releasing cigars that were not ready. And that's something that I'm very proud of my partner, Hochi Blanco and Hank. We stick it and say the cigar's not ready. We're not going to release it. And also many people in the industry, I remember calling some of my friends, and someone gave me 50,000, some 100,000, someone gave me a credit of 300,000 and say, when you have cigars, send it, but don't worry about it. Here's the money up front. So I owe everything that I have to the generosity and the help of many people, giants in the industry that came before, and Hochi and his friendship and generosity, that's for sure.
Yeah, Rafael, do you remember a guy named Stace Berkland from, he was in Charlotte, a friend of mine, he used to hang out at the shop at the old outlet.
Musician, play the piano, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He that year said you were going to get, he thought you were going to get, he actually did pick the Monty number two, but he thought that F-55 was, he has a knack of picking things. He right. thought it was going to be top three. I mean, I can tell you that straight. He was like, I'm telling you, if it's not the Monty 2, it's going to be the F-55. And yeah, it's a true story. He has a real knack of picking that. And I remember when it happened, he says, look, it beat the Davidoff and the Padron. I told you.
God listened to him. That's good.
Yeah, because you beat some very good cigars. I mean, Davidoff Nicaragua was three and the Padron 1964 was four. So, I mean, that's some heavy competition you're up against.
Yeah, no, I remember later on in one of the events in Vegas, you know, they have the effectively the 3-2-1, but this one was the 4-3-2, and they spoke before me, and I was so embarrassed. I had to tell you, I was so embarrassed coming after, you know, George Padron and the Davidoff guys and me, Hank and I, you know. So I all I did is I took my family, I took all my family members to the stage. Because really has been a family affair, right? You guys know, because you know, I'm sure at night the same thing. If it wasn't for the family, yeah, we couldn't do these things. You know?
Yeah, no, totally. I can tell you the same thing. My kids are older now too, so it's a little easier. You know, Aaron and Bear, who's at their house, they have young children. I don't know how they do it. So,
very understanding wives.
Yeah, I would say. So, you know, Rafael, as we, you know, you had some, that was a big breakthrough, boutique blends, the aging room brands are doing really good. There's a point, I guess, now you kind of had a little, test run with Altidus. Yeah. And this was, I remember, you know, this is the Romeo aging room.
Romeo by aging room. Man.
Yeah.
I had a crazy idea because the year before, Romeo by Romeo and Juliet, a red and white box, they been the number three cigar of the year.
That's right.
I love that cigar. I smoke that cigar. I bought that cigar very often. And so one day sitting and I said, you know, I was smoking that cigar. I said, you know, I'm going to offer them to do. I look at the portfolio. I said, you know, they missing a small batch. So I'm going to offer them to make a Romeo by aging room cigar. And I have to tell you, in my office, everybody laughed. I mean, you know, please. I'm a dreamer. If I'm anything, I'm a dreamer. And I went and I spoke to them. And to my unbelievable surprise, they say, let's do it. And then I was in the meeting, right? And I said, well, but I want to have control of the box. I want to have control of the names because I put all musical terminology to my my Vitola's name. And I remember Hank looking at me like, are you crazy? And I said, no, I want to do it. And this is a deal breaker. and they say, no, absolutely. And I had to tell you, it was an amazing experience working with this group of professionals, right? That they knew. I went to the factory in a tremendous amount of inventory of tobacco. They came to Hochi's factory. We worked together. We presented a blend. They picked it like that. And that cigar last year was a number 15 of the year. So
yeah.
We don't no longer have it. I sit in some shops. So that was a dream come true. And that was the beginning, right? So that was the beginning. We created a relationship with the company, with Javier Estades, who's giving me these amazing opportunities. And they asked me to join them to work on the blends. And that's what I've been doing. So now I have a bigger canvas. I have a lot more blends from where I was doing. Aging Room for me was a laboratory of ideas, bringing different blends, these small batches. And now I had not only the opportunity to do that, but then some iconic brands, right? And that has been, for me, a dream come true.
You know, Rob, I know it's a, I've said this when Eddie was on too, the brands that this, you know, tobacco has is, you know, they're iconic. Even like my dad, I had commented, you know, when I have a guest from Tabacalera USA / Altadis, he's like, I know those cigars. You know, it probably every cigar smoker has smoked one of those brands. I mean, so it was a massive opportunity.
No, right. It's an amazing, and to now be the gatekeeper of the flavors of those brands, right, has been an amazing, and creating, having that opportunity. And again, we have an amazing portfolio of tobaccos. I think the last, as you know, Tabacalera de Garcia, our factory in Dominican, is celebrating this year their 50th anniversary, 50.
Yeah.
And we were looking at the different information. We have over 300 employees that have been there more than 20 years. We have 100 and some employees that have been there more than 30 years. The inventory of tobacco that we have is second to none. I had a group of manufacturers visit the factory on the TAA, and they were looking at a Sumatra wrapper, 10 years old. They never seen that. We had those 10 years have been aging this wrapper. It's just an amazing opportunity to create blends with this type of tobaccos, you know?
No, very, very true. Was it, I mean, I guess for you, maybe it wasn't as hard because, you know, you went from a small company to a big company, but you worked in healthcare, so you probably knew how to navigate a landscape of a big company.
Well, it is, and it is a big company, and it's a corporate structure. But what we are trying to bring to the company, and I think that was mandated by Javier, was, you know, let's be big, right? But let's act like a small. Let's be entrepreneurial, and that's something that I know about it. And then use our structure to move fast. You know, sometimes the big companies have a problem getting product to the market right away, things like that, and because there's a lot of processes and systems involved. And we have been streamlining all these, and now, as of, I don't know. 3 weeks ago, now they charge for marketing as well. So I get to work with a fantastic group of marketing people that have been working on these projects for a while, and now I have the opportunity to work not only on the blends, but also in the overall idea of the projects. And so it's an amazing opportunity, that's for sure.
Right. So just so I understand too, I think everyone has it, you still own Boutique Blends / Aging Room Cigars.
Yes,
right?
I do. But
Altadis is distributing it, and you're in a dual role.
Yeah, they distribute it, and basically, you know, Aging Room now is one of our different babies that we have. We continue creating that. But it's just one of the different brands that we manage, and we manage it just as we manage the other brand as well. But we own the brand, but they do the distribution, you know. So yes.
Now, Hank's still involved with you?
Yes.
So okay, Hank, we saw him at the Placencia booth this year too. So I didn't know if he was in a dual role as well with that.
It is. He is in the dual role. He's still my partner in Boutique Blend, but I have worked with the Placencia when they created the Alma Fuerte and the sure. Placencia brand. I've been telling them for a long time, you guys need to do your brand, because I knew the history.
Yeah.
I worked with them for a long time, and it's been they're friends of my family, Lina's family, for a long time. They were actually neighbors in Pinar del Rio. So we always had a great relationship. I worked with them. I learned a lot on the countryside, on the tobacco. from them and for Nestor specifically, and his son Nestor Andres and the whole team. And so I helped them create the distribution, the brand, and the idea for the launching. And but when I came to Altadis, I came on an exclusive basis. I cannot work with any of companies, and they needed that. And Hank is helping them as well in their distribution, and in addition to do the logistic side of our cigars, moving the cigar from here to there, the label, things like that for us. But again, this is an amazing opportunity because they are partners of ours, just like AJ Fernandez and things like that. So I have been able to put together the partnership with Hoshi Blanco, with Nestor, Paciencia, with AJ Fernandez, and work together. Since we don't have a factory in Nicaragua, we have to work with some of the most amazing people in Nicaragua. So we're creating some great projects there as well.
I got to ask how you met AJ Fernandez, because I always see you two together on social media. You guys are sometimes joined at the hip. I mean, how did you come about meeting AJ Fernandez, and how did that friendship build?
AJ, I met him right when he started the business, but I knew his father that worked through Plasencia for 20 years before.
That's right.
So his father is an uncle of Nestor Plasencia Sr., he's an uncle, and they have. He was in charge of the processing a place in Ocotali, Nicaragua, for 20 years before he came from Cuba. And I met him right from the beginning. He was starting his brand. I talked to him briefly that day. From there on, we created a great relationship. Then, when he separated from the previous partners, and then he retook the ownership of his distribution down here. I helped him as well because it's an amazing family. AJ is a unique individual. It's out of this world what he has been able to accomplish. This guy came from Cuba in 2003 to Nicaragua with nothing. And you should see the amount of tobacco, the amount of what he's done with the factory, and he's created an empire. And so I love people like that, and they, so I help him on that, and then we continue that relationship.
Yeah, I remember you were actually working with him before Altadis, because I went down to visit you in the office, and I got to see your laboratory, and you handed me a couple of these cigars to smoke, and one of them was the Pelo de Oro. And right. I'm like, this thing's amazing. Like, who did this? He's like, AJ. I'm like, wow. And I guess, yeah, you go, you can't talk about it. Yeah, it's coming out the shop. But it was really good, yeah.
Right, right. And we have actually created some fantastic blend that later on we brought to Altadis. And actually some blends like the A. Shorterman by AJ Fernandez. That was a blend that we were working together. And I FDA was coming and Altadis pick it up and put it under the name A. Shorterman. And really had a renaissance of that brand for them. So, I guess the stars were aligning, right?
Yeah.
Aligning in that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it started with actually the Monte Cristo that was the one that went to JR originally in Santa Clara. And then it started expanding to a lot of them. But I remember that H. Upman, that one did seem to be the one that resonated with a lot of people, and it really kind of revived, I thought, the H. Upman brand. I think you're 100% right on that.
Yeah, no, actually, it's still a very large portion of the sales of that brand. We actually releasing in 2 months, we're releasing a limited edition of that brand in a 60 ring size. AJ has a farm, La Lilia, which is named after his grandmother that took care of him in Cuba when the mother and father left Cuba. And he bought that brand, that farm 10 years ago, and he named it as his grandmother. So we actually took tobacco from that farm and from the first few crops, and we blended that for the new A. Shorterman by AJ Fernandez limited edition, La Lilia, which is coming out in 2 months. So so everything has come in full cycle, that's for sure.
No, it's very true. Very true. The other team, I said the team that you work with, the Grupo de Maestros, kind of a very different concept than most cigar companies have. And you have this all-star team. You come in here, you're in your new role. How do you now kind of deal with these guys when making cigars? You know, have over 150 years cigar experience between them. How do you kind of come in there, and how do you kind of work with them? Because that must be, you know, that can't be an easy thing.
No, it's been an easy thing because what I find in individuals like that, Pedro Ventura, Javier Hermosi out of the Grupo Maestro, these are individuals that love teaching, right, to the young people. And so they never, really, I never felt like they didn't like me. They, from the day one, they welcomed the new vision that I had with the flavor of the blends, and they were ready to move to the new generations, what I call generations of blend, trying different tobaccos. Because, you know, the business has changed, the blends have changed. People in Dominican, like Carlos Fuentes, which, by the way, had joined us, Carlos, and I want to say hello to Carlos Fuentes, who joined us at the beginning. He was watching right from the beginning, and as well that Justin Andrew, that is a good friend, that just joined us as well. Skip Martin as well. So some of the cigar guy, I cannot forget Alan Ruby, my friend Alan.
that's Santa Clara Alan, we call him.
No, the other Alan is in there as well.
The both Alan's in it. I can't tell the difference anymore between these two.
Most are there.
okay. The real Alan Ruby is there. Yeah, he was on last week. Yeah.
They're both reels, okay? So, and Alan, I saw it last week. And by the way, Michael Herlock also joined us. So, these are amazing people that have worked so hard for the industry. Because, you know, so just like these people that I mentioned, the Grupo de Maestros really have a tremendous amount of experience, but they're people willing to try new things, willing to expand. I've taken them to Nicaragua. We worked together. I took AJ Fernandez. I took Pepin Garcia and his whole family to our factory in Tabacalera, because what you know working in the tobacco industry and the cigar industry is that you always, always have something to learn. And that's what you learn from these guys, right? That they know a lot, more than I will ever be able to learn. But they are willing to continue learning. And that's a cigar is about learning. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, that's doing this show is learning for, I think, us too. There's so much we don't know. And it's kind of, by talking about it, we learn about it too, which I find very rewarding too, you know, because like we don't get rich off this, but we do get this part back. We get to talk to great people. So I think it like I said, we do this because we love it.
Exactly. Well, I have to tell you, and that is exactly because, you know, my journey in the cigar industry has been a difficult one, right? But one that I have enjoyed. And I can tell you, I didn't do it for the money. I trust me, you know, I really never made money on this, but what I did was I have enjoyed every single minute of it, and the learning is something that no one can take away from you.
Yeah. Well, very true, very true. So along the way, we're going to get to a lot of the great Altadis releases that you've been involved with, but there was when you incorporated Aging Room into the Altadis / Tobacco Real USA family, you had to make some changes to the line. There was a big changing of the line last year. What was kind of some of the thinking with that, doing a major overhaul of Aging Room?
Well, you know, it's two different type of visions and company. So we have to align the product with the company. For example, as you know, we had a lot of small batches, not enough tobacco to supply so many stores at the same time. This was a product that you have to educate. We had, these names that I put, they call it accounting, you know, so it's my accounting background on this is the F55, the M356, the F55F, and the F55 this and the thing and that. So that was a difficult thing because we have a lot. One of the amazing things that this company have is the powerful commercial operations and salespeople that we have, and that visit, you know, most of the cigar stores around the nation. But they also carry a huge portfolio of brands. So when someone was had all these brand names, you know, like the Concerto or the Vibrato or the Espressivo, and you know, I remember the first few weeks, it was just answering calls all the time. Hey, which one is the Toro, you know? Well, that's Espresivo. That's the Vibrato. I mean, it was just so we knew that we needed to make changes to the line. In addition, we needed to structure the line a little bit better instead of having so many different small batches around. And that's what we did. And we streamlined. We had the Solera line, which is one line, has different, it's a Solera method of aging tobacco, which is not, it's a method used in the wine industry and also in the spirit business. This is how they age the wines. Then we streamlined that. We put it as a focus. And that line, then we came out with a core line, which under Habano, Maduro, and Connecticut. And then the Quattro line, the unique Quattro line, which is the 55, but we call it now regional, the Nicaragua, the Connecticut, the Maduro. It was a little bit easier to understand. And what we did is we created a separate version for a small batches. And that is where we continue to create the Pura Cepa last year, now the big number two. We are relaunching a new reblending, the Pelo de Oro.
Oh, wow.
Batch. Yeah, yeah, it's something that I like. But the Pelo de Oro, for example, came in one size only in boxes of 10, didn't go with everything else the line, so we're making it part of the small batch bars. And then we changed the name of the aging room to Aging Room by Rafael Nodal. So that way we have now four pillars of the company. It's a little of the line is a little bit more structured. And what we did is we separated and we didn't concentrate on the swag or the Oliveros brand, and we are concentrating on Aging Room, as it was definitely the one that it was more viable. That's for sure.
Yeah, now you got. You got a big rating on the Nicaragua this year, which I tell you, I really like that cigar too.
Thank you. That was we just received a 94 rating. You know, a little bit ago, and then the other side has got a 92, 91. So, and that was particularly important to us because again, I have been doing a lot of blending for Altadis and for Tabacalera under on Nicaragua, because again, we didn't have a factory in Nicaragua. Nicaragua has been increasing as an origin. I mean, 20 years ago, Nicaragua introduced or imported or exported to the United States 20 million cigars and 24 million cigars. Last year it was 178 million cigars. So it has an impressive growth. Because of the flavors and the aroma and everything else that has been happening there. But we have, as a company, made a decision to expand on that and with our partners. And so by being able to get that high rating on the Aging Room Cuatro Nicaragua was a very special thing for me because, but the Cuatro line, the 55, did fantastic. So this was a follow-up, and we, it shows that, ratings are rating. It's subjective, right? But at the end of the day, it validates a little bit our spirit of what we're doing, and it's always good to get those things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to be doing our big prediction show in a few months, and I know that's going to be one in play. I mean, we're going to definitely be that's going to be a contender for sure. You know, when we start looking at that and see where it's going to land.
Yeah, we follow these ratings every 2 weeks, and then every magazines and they're fantastic cigars. You know, one thing though is that this day to be a smoker is the best time to be a cigar smoker because they're fantastic cigars. People are aging the tobacco. We are working with a tremendous variety. What big companies are doing, what small companies are doing, what the family. Traditional family in the cigar industry has been doing. This is a very dynamic industry. So hopefully the FDA, the government, let us continue to survive and to exist, and we can continue to do what we do better, is create experiences for the adult consumer.
Very good. Very good. Aaron, anything else before we start hitting some of the newer projects here?
No, I think we're good to go there.
Okay, great. So, 2000, this was a big year, I think, for the brands. Right. And particularly, you had two anniversaries this year, as you mentioned. One was the anniversary of Tobacco Lord Garcia, and the other one's the 175th of H. Upman. And I think probably Altidus has done a really good job at really embracing anniversaries over the years. Some companies do a better job at it than others. I think you guys have done a very good job with this. So you had a couple of big projects in mind that you for a couple of your, those are two of your major brands, I would say too.
Right. Yeah. Right. And also it's a big year also for Trinidad. That's what we get.
50th. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Tabacalera as well. So, you know, when you have these as fantastic brands, you have opportunities like this to have 175th anniversary. That's an amazing thing, right? 1884. It's just an amazing thing. So, unfortunately, not many companies can do that. You know. So, last year, the IPCPR, I thought it was an amazing year. We had a fantastic. We have the Monte Cristo Nicaragua release, which was made it to number 10 of the year. So we had the difficulty, right, for me and our team is that when you have something good, you have to come back and do it again and try to do it better. And the whole team has been take it on, let's do it. So this year was our best year. Our increase on the show from last year was amazing, considering as you guys did on your follow-up, talk about your show problems in the group of you guys that discussed it, which I watched the whole thing. You know, we got less attendance, we got less enthusiasm, and we have the problem with identity of the organization, and there were a lot, you know, the time of the year, the holiday coming in the 4th of July. So there was a lot of difficulties. And even like that, we were double digits, right? Higher than last year. You know, so that's a great validation that the products we have releases are really being accepted by the consumers and the retailers. Because at the end of the day, retailers are not in the business of buying cigars. Retailers are in the business of selling cigars. Yeah. So they're buying what people are buying, and that has been a great validation of our idea of where the blend should go. And my job is to take every one of these amazing iconic brands and take the consumer in a journey of flavors and experiences and one thing after the other, you know? So to give the new experiences and new flavors. And yes, the amazing releases this year.
Yeah, so you know, let's talk about we started with H. Upman. Let's talk about that 175 cigar. You guys made a decision to work with AJ with that for that cigar.
Right. And listen, we have the anniversary coming on. We knew that we wanted to concentrate it. And I remember seeing on AJ, and that's why you spend a lot of time in the factories and knowing everything. So AJ had a tobacco that I have to tell you, only AJ could have been doing this because it was a little bit crazy. We got a wrapper there. The wrapper that we're using on this cigar is a medio tiempo wrapper. It's from the top. It's right on the top of the Ligero, right? In the past, it had been mixed normally, this type of leaves with the Ligero because there's not a lot of it. It doesn't grow every year. Depends on the weather condition. It also doesn't grow every single plant, and when it grows, it's only two leaves. But AJ have been accumulating this wrapper, and then he did something very unique on the fermentation. So basically, he took the fermentation on the pilons. Normally, tradition, as you know, you put the leaves on the pilon, you add humidity, and start the fermentation process, and turn it and continue turning. So what he did is he created a knowing that he had this very special wrapper, he put a layer of broadleaf tobacco, and that's the one he put the humidity on. Then he put another layer of this medio tiempo tobacco. He didn't add humidity, and they hit another layer on the top of the broadleaf again with humidity. Right. So all of the sun, the heated the heat started, the temperature started rising on the broad leaf, and little by little affected the this other medio tiempo in the middle. And so what it normally will take 8 to 9 months took 3 years of fermentation. And then he had to throw away the broadleaf. And I don't have to tell you, broadleaf is...
Yeah, because a lot of people say, what is he throwing away broadleaf for? That's what we heard from a lot of people. Like, is he really doing this? Because it's like, he's throwing away broadleaf?
It's on demand, right? Thanks to a company like ours, the broadleaf is on demand.
Right.
Because of the mass market has grown dramatically.
Right.
Macros that our company makes. And so these... this special wrapper that have been in slowly fermenting for almost 3 years was the one that we used on this. So we knew that we had a fantastic tobacco, and we knew that we could do it in an amazing project. So so that's how we celebrate in that amazing anniversary.
And has that cigar hit the stores yet?
It actually just started shipping a few days ago.
Okay.
We also did a series of humidors, commemorative humidors that come with the cigars. And in addition, we're selling the cigars aside. But it's a limited edition to because of the tobacco. It's limited to about 150,000 cigars. So it's a very small. We wanted to have enough tobacco to have 175,000 cigars, right? To mix it with the anniversary.
Right.
Did not, Mother Nature did not give us enough.
Yep, and it's in one size. It's a Churchill, correct?
Yeah, and you know we have as a brand manager, Candela Diaz, that came from Habanos in Spain in our company in the Cuban division, and so we as you know they have been right now a tendency to fatter cigars, smaller cigars. And this is in a traditional Churchill size. We did it in 50 instead of 47. It's because we wanted to do a very traditional size on this one as well. So, yeah, so we did it in only one size available.
Oh, great. We talked about the other H. Upman cigar before the show. We'll give our thoughts on what we're smoking in a little bit. But I want to talk about this one because this one was, in my opinion, this was a real star. This is the H. Upman Hispaniola by Jose Mendez.
Right.
This was, and I'll let you kind of talk about this because I found this to be possibly the most unique cigar I've had out of Altadis ever. I really enjoyed this cigar.
It is definitely very unique. And again, every single cigar we're doing is very unique. Different tobaccos. For example, one of the amazing things of a company like this is the amazing partners that we get to work with. And Jose Mendez has been growing tobacco in the Dominican Republic since the early 60s, right? Jose Mendez came from Cuba, brought some seeds, and started growing tobacco. In 1972, they separated and they made this company called Jose Mendez. And they have been, they're for sure one of the largest producer of tobacco in Dominican Republic, if not the largest. And they have been growing tobacco for us for a long time. And they have recaptured some varieties that were lost, like the Pilotico, where we had released before the Monte Cristo Pilotico. So that was the original Piloto, right, that is used in Dominican. But after so many years, the Piloto has adapted very well to Dominican conditions and start changing, right? So this was the original Pilotico, the original Piloto seed, and recapture that we have been using it, and other varieties as well. And, we use here as well the Andullo, which is a very Dominican way of fermenting the tobacco, but in, the Andullo is used in Dominican these days in part of the country that is produced this. And instead of using that, we went to Fito to Jose Mendez and a company, and they produce the to our standards the how we need it, because, you know, being such a large company, being part of a multinational conglomerate, we have certain things that we have to work with, making sure that the fertilizer we use are approved and there's no residuals and things like that. So he made the Andouille for us. And then I worked on this blend for almost 2 years since I joined the company. And the idea started as an Andouille blend, and then we started mixing with different varieties. And at the end, what we did with Española is the name of the island where Dominican is. The island has two countries, Dominican Republic and Haiti, but the island is called Española. And we use different varieties, including the Pilotico and the Andouille. So on this cigar, the idea is that, you know, there's something different. But the Andouille is part of the story, not necessarily the main part of the story, but it's part of the story. And what we were able to create is people that perhaps may not like the Andouille will enjoy this. And we brought them the appeal of a very unique and very different cigar.
You told me too, like right before the show, this was one of the toughest projects you've worked on as well.
Right. Two years.
Yeah.
Because the Andouille, you know, there's not a lot of experience in blending with these things. And we did not want to copy anybody else. We wanted to do it from the beginning and have our own concept and our own flavor profile that came with the Shortman line. Because again, what we're doing is every single line has their own identity, and we're trying to do a flavor profile. And so it's a journey to the different varieties of tobacco from the island that have been produced by the Jose Mendez family.
And this is a regular production cigar.
That is a very regular production. So because of the Andouille has a unique way of being produced, they have been working, the Mendez family have been working on making this enough Andouille to what we thought the production needed to be. So it took years. We wanted to release it a year ago. We were not ready on the blend, and we certainly were not ready on the amount of Andouille. We continued fermenting it and perfecting the way into the Andouille was done. It was the first time that the Mendez family prepared Andouille, so it was a learning experience for them as well. And together we were able to come with this particular blend that I am extremely proud of.
Yeah, no, and I'm going to talk about this when we'll talk about what we're smoking in the next part here. This is a very interesting cigar, and I, like I said, I really enjoyed this cigar. Moving along, this year was another. You mentioned another anniversary, Trinidad, right. And Trinidad. It was great to see Trinidad kind of get. You kind of had a little bit of a. You kind of were involved with the initial, like I'd say, relaunch of Trinidad with Trinidad Santiago.
Right. So when I joined the company and they gave me, open arms to do what I needed to do, and I look at Trinidad as one of those brands, right? That we have. It's difficult when you have in the portfolio brands like Monte Cristo and Nicaragua, right?
Yeah.
Very difficult, right? Because of that, you know, they take all the attention. But we have an amazing amount of different brands, and Trinidad from the beginning was something. So I team up with Hochi. It was, and listen, out of respect, loyalty, and an appreciation, we created the Trinidad Santiago with tobacco from Hochi Blanco, and it was a Dominican puro, all tobacco from Dominican, which are not many of them in the market because the wrapper, as you know, Dominican doesn't produce enough. Carlos Fuente has done an amazing job of working on that project and some others. But we decided to do that with Hochi. And then as a follow-up on the Trinidad, it just happened that it got last year as well, one of the highest one as well, in the top 25.
Yeah, you guys had two cigars in the top 25. You're the only company last year, yeah.
Well, last year we had the Monte Cristo and the Trinidad.
Yeah.
And so that was the first attempt to revive that. And then Eddie Guerra came along, part of the team, and had the responsibility to work in brands like Trinidad, Onyx, and some other. and took into that, and he took it in terms of a particular way, a particular idea to celebrate the spirit. A spirit of tobacco, of where the brand came from. So it has some Caribbean, some Cuban, some motif. And it was a unique launching because we created, Eddie created a particular playlist, right? Spotify on that. You can check it out on TrinidadSantiagoMusic.com. And so it has, actually, it's probably the only cigar that comes with their own music to sit down and do that. And for me, being a musician, right, and with everything in my life is driven by music, food, and drinks. So it was very important to do that. So we team up with AJ on this again, and we created this very unique flavor for what we believe it will be a success. And, you know, again, it was the massive amount of orders on the show. So it was very well accepted because it's a unique packaging, unique view that Eddie has created, and gave me the opportunity to create this fantastic blend and pairing all these two things, you know?
And it was it brought a Nicaraguan Puro into the Trinidad brand, which it hadn't seen that before.
Right. And so, listen, we have obviously part of the company owns the Cuban cigar. So you got the Cuban Trinidad, which is a Cuban Puro, obviously. We got the Dominican Puro, and we have now the Nicaraguan Puro. So I, for a long time, I started working in my Oliveros brand and boutique blend. I like the opportunity to create different things. So a series of unique one. The problem is, what do we do next, right? So we already started, by the way, you know. So we came from the show, we got success. Okay, now, checking the quality, making sure that every cigar is what you expect, and then we are already creating. I showed you before the show some of my blends as my homework this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
Creating new stuff, so it never stops.
Yeah, we feel bad for you on that, by the way. You got to work.
I know. I have a great collection of rum for the weekend and other spirits and cigars. So.
And I've been to Raphael's office, by the way. It's an extension of his, that's an extension of your office, I'd say too.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. That was fun there. And I think we shouldn't also leave out, we kind of talked about, but the Monte Cristo 50 as well, which was a beautiful release that you guys had this year.
Yes, and again, you know, how you celebrate the 50th anniversary of this factory, who has been there for in the same place for 50 years. It was, as you know, because you're in the business and you visit all these factories, in Dominican Republic and Iowa, the free zones are very important because we create a lot of employment and opportunity to make things in our countries, which the economy, obviously, they always need that to employ people. And this was the first free zone that was created. And it had an illustrious history, the factory. And listen, it's a factory that has grown to be the largest cigar factory in the world. It has over 5,000 employees. For this anniversary, we were doing the numbers, and we have made in that factory 1.2 billion handmade cigars in that factory. We have a humidor, an aging room, with over 7 million cigars resting there.
Wow.
Over $150 million in tobacco inventory for the premium side. It is an amazing opportunity, amazing to see and work with there. So we created, our head, Lucrecia is our head that oversee the rollers, and she had been with us for 44 years, and so she made by herself all of these cigars, rolled all these cigars herself, and with a Sumatra wrapper 10 years old. I mean, you know, it's easier to say, you know, yeah. 10 years old, this wrapper has been aging there, and you need tobaccos in size, extremely well aged. So we created this in two sizes, in a Toro, which is a round side, but we also in a box press as well, that comes in a humidor, in a Eli Blue humidor, and also Eddie created a fantastic project on this, and so we feel that we have done a very well project, very good project to celebrate this unique opportunity, because this is the second largest employer. The Tabacalera Garcia is the second largest employer on this part of the island, and it's one of the four largest employer in the country. Has 65% of the 5,000 employees are women, many of them single mother. So this has been single-handed one of the businesses that have lifted more people from poverty than any other business, because the other business in the area is the Central Azucarero, the sugar cane mills, and mostly males work on this. So our factory employs a lot of women, and again, a lot of single women. So, and it does a lot of social work to the community and to try to end literacy and teaching people how to read, I mean, and moving people to different levels. We have people from there that have moved to United States, a part of our other companies and businesses. Ernesto Ken Wilkie, that worked with me, came from the factory. We have a tremendous amount of respect for what is being done on the factory. So we wanted to celebrate it. So four amazing projects that we did, and again, double digits compared to last year, and we are seeing a tremendous growth of our brands and many, many new things to come.
No, those humidors were beautiful. I mean, they were just works of art. In fact, my wife's one of the proofreaders now, and she happened to proofread the Cinquenta article, and she kind of comes back to me. She says, "Are you correct on that price, the $10,000?" I said, "Yeah," but you sold them all out, right?
Yeah, and we announced it at the TAA, right?
Right.
There might be a few that are still open, but we announced it at the TAA, and right there that evening, we sold. A lot of people spoke for them. So yeah, so we're very proud. And then the last release that we did this year was the Aging Room.
I was going to get to that one. Yeah, I wanted to get that one. Yep.
Yeah. So that's that completes our projects for these releases. And the Aging Room being number two, it's for me, it's a very special project, because the original being number one was a full a Dominican tobacco with an Ecuadorian wrapper. Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, and I celebrated some of the older tobacco that Hoshi Blanco had for his inventory. And now we went to the Plasencia family. I fell in love with an area of the country, Nicaragua. You know, Nicaragua is the land of volcanoes, right?
Right.
But there's one particular area that I happen to believe is the closest there is to Cuban tobacco. It's the Ometepe area. And we took some of the rarest tobacco and older tobacco that Plasencia had in his inventory and allowed to use it. And we created the Aging Room Big Number Two. So this has become a series and one that we are extremely fantastic. And then we took a Ligero wrapper, right? Which we, you know, it's very difficult to work with Ligero wrappers. First of all, there's not a lot. And second, it's very difficult to burn. So you have to do an amazing job in the fermentation of it to make sure it burns. And especially with tobaccos inside that are so complex on it. So I think we did it. And again, five different projects with five different blends, with five different identities. And the most difficult thing for me, to make sure that not all cigars taste the same, right? And you know, it happens. It's something that is difficult when you blend in so many cigars. And I think we've been able to work through our partners with this and make that happen.
on the bin number two, you mentioned the Ometepe tobacco, and I've heard a lot of times it's a tough tobacco to work with, but you kind of went with a concept of with the Placencias on an Ometepe forward blend.
Right.
So it's a challenging tobacco to work with. So what was kind of the secret of working with that tobacco with this blend to kind of make it Ometepe centric?
Right. Last year we had the opportunity to create the aging room Pura Cepa, and that we incorporated Ometepe because we wanted to do all four regions, Jalapa, Condega, Esteli, and Ometepe, the four major regions. But when we were working with that, we saw this tobacco, the Placencia, which I also worked with that when they were creating their Placencia lines. And he has this unique, and Placencia is one of the only ones that grows tobacco there, right?
Right.
In the last few years, there have been some other people grown, but I remember when I was getting to the industry, right? And a guy like Nunez, right? From General Cigar, I saw an article that David Savona wrote about tobaccos grown under the volcanoes. And I read that story. I fell in love without seeing it, right? Without seeing the tobacco, but the whole concept and idea. And then as I started working on the country and I started getting more familiar with the tobacco, I found, for me, it is one of the closest, definitely, to Cuban tobacco. Being Cuban, I love the Cuban tobacco, the Cuban flavor, very unique. Things like Pepin Garcia is doing, Abdel, and so on. So I started working with that. But the easiest part was because we had this tobacco that is very, very aged, and that helped tremendously because these are tobacco that just have a different level, right? A next level of flavors and aromas due to the aging as well. So, just like in wine, just like in the spirits, you get a great tobacco and you age it for many years, and that is only going to get better, right? You get bad tobacco, you age it for many years, and it's going to be the same as bad or even worse.
Right.
But this was an amazing opportunity to work with that. And actually, it wasn't as difficult because of the aging. I remember working in other projects with newer tobacco. It was a little bit more difficult because you can use it for blending, but it's hard to put a lot of it because it's the type of flavor. But this one, by doing it with aged, very well aged tobacco, made all the difference. And actually, it's hard to say. I feel bad saying it wasn't very difficult but it's like when you cook, right? If you cook with the best ingredient, right, and the best things, and it shows. And so it actually, for me, wasn't a very difficult one. And few months before, we released the another cigar, also more complex, the Espada Oscuro, Monte Cristo Espada Oscuro. And I had been working with this particular wrapper, Ligero wrapper, extremely fermented. And so although it's a completely different blend, it uses some of the same characteristics of the wrapper. But again, inside it's different. So we had a little bit of the experience of working already with that wrapper. And now together with the other blend, the Ometepe was a little bit easier. About 75% of the tobacco inside is the filler is Ometepe.
Wow.
It's very unique.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I remember hearing that. I was like, and you don't hear that often. That's why I was like curious about that.
No. It's that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's an area that it's very romantic. And when you see these tobacco farms right next to the volcano, it's a unique experience. And that's when you know that tobacco is a plant, right? That is it's been given by the gods. So it's an amazing product,
Very true. Very true. Aaron, any more questions on some of the lines here?
I do actually. One of the brands that is in the portfolio that I guess doesn't really have that big of a presence or is in the spotlight in the United States is Vega Fina. Are there plans to kind of put a little bit more attention on that brand in the future?
Yes, it is. And I said, that's actually a brand. And that's a very good question because that's not a brand that we haven't had too much success in the United States. Although as a company, it's one of our largest brands worldwide. It's actually the number one brand in the world outside United States compared after the Cuban cigars. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Spain alone is a massive brand, and in the rest of the world. And in the last few years, our people have been working and created fantastic new small releases from that. We are aligning the flavors and the aroma to the United States market. And I'm actually working as right now in a blend that it will be our release for next year. For international market, we do a blend for our Vega Fina. Every year has the 1999, the 2019, 2000, and then working on that. Yes, so we are the short answer is yes. However, we have been looking at the flavor profile to make it more relevant to what people are smoking and people wanted in this country. And it definitely has been a challenge, and one that I took on the challenge since the beginning. And because we have Vega Fina wide, but then if you look at some of the releases, I was smoking today Vega Fina Sumo with an amazing wrapper, an African Cameroon. And this cigar has been sitting in our warehouse for 10 years, that cigar has been sitting there. And it still was complex and flavorful. And it was a 60 ring size that brought a lot of the flavors to the filler. So we do have some history. We had the Vega Fina Fortaleza 2, the Sumo line. We had a lot of different small releases that have been very successful. But the challenge is to align the flavors with the palate here, and that's I'm the only one now that want to make sure that it's that it's responsible for doing that, and that's something that the company has worked hard, and we have not been successful. Though it's a challenge that I take a little bit nervous. I don't like to fail, and it's definitely a difficult one. But yeah, we're working on. They released that year in Europe. The year, they have a release. This year is the rat. You know, the pig. Last year, and some amazing blends that had come from that, and we want to be able to bring that and align that, because it's the only brand in our company that is a worldwide brand. We have the Cuban cigars outside the United States, and in the United States we have the other side, Dominican, Nicaragua, but Vega Fina is the only one that is a worldwide brand, so we wanted to pay the attention and the respect that it deserves.
And I believe it was the Siete Años that was released a couple of years ago. That was an amazing cigar, and the price point on it was fantastic. Like, it was like the best of both worlds in that cigar.
Yeah, no, and I think actually, you know, we got an award at this show for Fina, right? So it's definitely there. We just have to find a way to do a better job of telling the, you know, taking the word out of what the brand has to offer. But it's a lot of different brands, so it's easier to be lost in such a small. That's why big portfolio. That's why we're getting all the other brands one by one, and we continue. We continue that. And by the way, Alan Rubin is our Alan Rubin from Santa Clara. He said, Lucrecia is an outstanding roller. Well,
oh yeah.
When you have been rolling cigar for 44 years, my friend, that's amazing.
He's the architect of the number two. I mean, that's really hers, right? The number two was hers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned, Aaron mentioned Vega Fina, and I went over to Europe, and I've had a chance to smoke several of these. I've smoked the Grand Reserva, the 1998, and the one that really surprised me was when I was in Sweden, and I smoked the Stork Cut. Raphael, I went into a store because I was just looking for something different that wasn't Cuban, and they handed me that cigar. I lit it up, and I should have bought more of them is all I regret. That was a cigar I said, you know what, that cigar, I see something like that resonating here. with that broadleaf wrapper, and it was some, I didn't expect a broadleaf on a Vega Fina. It wasn't some, and it was a very popular cigar in Sweden. I found out too. People were really, they were also telling me, yeah, great cigar, great cigar.
Yeah, no, it does very well there, like I said. But on the last few years, what we have done is taking some ideas that we had created here. So we got a Vega Fina Pilotico, Vega Fina Stoll Cut that came from a Henry Clay blend that was a Stoll Cut that we.
Yeah.
And then we got now a Vega Fina Andujo that I'm working on. We have.
Oh, nice.
I'm actually, I spent last week in Dominican Republic working on that. So we have a lot of different ideas that we create here, and then we can expand it in under the Vega Fina one. So it's an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, I would encourage folks, if there are some folks that will sell those to the States in Europe, some of those Vega Finas, I really encourage folks to try them. I think they'd be in for a big, and I look forward to seeing Vega Finas in the U.S. as well. Because it's just every Vega, and the ones you mentioned, the Sumum, the Fortalezas, I mean, they were just great cigars. Absolutely. It just seemed like that brand is just, it's a very hidden gem in the portfolio. I agree with Aaron on that.
The Gran Reserva 2019, yeah. Cigars, you know, they're great
things
in there, that's for sure.
Yeah, like I said, it was a great cigar.
Another brand that you mentioned was the Henry Clay, and I think another cigar that's going to do very well for you this year is that Warhawk. I've had a chance to smoke it, and it's a very good cigar.
Aaron actually liked that cigar.
Yeah.
Well, it's rare we hear him say that.
I'm glad because, you know, that cigar comes from our Flor de Copan factory. Flor de Copan is also a very unique factory in Honduras. This factory is celebrating this year the 44th anniversary. It's an amazing factory. It was actually sitting in that region. It's in the Copan area, Santa Rosa Copan. That was the first, the site of the first cigar factory in the world, in the Americas. Okay, besides Spain. So in the Americas, it was the site of the first. These people have tremendous amount of history, and just like in Tabacada Garcia, we have people there working for many, many, many years. So when we were working on that idea on the Henry Clay Warhawk, we wanted something a little bit different. Until now, Henry Clay has been a brand that used a lot of broadleaf. So I wanted to continue that, but using the Corenico Ecuador. So what we did is we used the binder, right, as the broadleaf binder, the broadleaf as a binder. And so the uniqueness of that flavor and sweetness of that wrapper with the Ecuadorian Connecticut and the different blends of Criollo 98 grown in that region just made a unique flavor profile. So we actually expanding on that because it's a line that I think it has a lot of potential. As you mentioned, Aaron, it was extremely well received. We launched it in March of this year. It's hard when you have releases that are not associated with the IPCPR,
right?
Because you don't get the present. But I can tell you, it was very well received. Continue to do well, surprise us at the show how well it continues to do. So our job now is to take in all these other brands and have find their identities, right? A few years ago, the company did a partnership and a blend that it was created by Tatuaje, right? And they sold out, I think, in a few minutes on the show. And that was the beginning of the renaissance of the brand, because it's one of the very old Cuban brands, right? And so we see a lot of potential, not only here, but internationally as well.
Nice. I agree. And that was, you know, I was kind of, why are they putting, I was wondering why I put a Connecticut on the Henry Clay. And then when you guys came out with it, I think we were all real surprised.
Yeah.
I think that was, and I had a chance to smoke the Corona at the media party as well. I hadn't smoked that size, and that's a great size as well.
Well, I have on the blends that I show you, I have a different one sitting here.
Uh-oh.
We are working on it right now. And it's called NPD 275. NPDs for new project development. It's the 275, and that's something that we are working with different wrappers on that. So, you know, the imagination has now run wild, and the opportunity to create new profiles. But again, using the broad leaf as a base, right? So that's something that we are working on. Very interesting. And you know, I have some experience with that because I used to have an Oliveros Excel for men that is one of those things that I did before. And at the time, I used a Brazilian wrapper with a broadleaf binder. So they're actually that as a binder or even in some of the filler works tremendously. And we're growing a lot of broadleaf. We took the seed. We have been growing in Honduras that as well, and as well as many other countries, everybody's growing broadleaf. So we're using that from Honduras, and I think this release had opened up a tremendous opportunity for the line and for the creativity part.
Nice.
One more question, Rafael, and then we'll get into a couple of the other fun segments here. So there's a lot of changes on the horizon right now for Tabacalera USA with what Imperial's announced. I don't know how much you could talk about it, but what's your feelings right now? I mean, it seems like it's business as usual for you guys, but I mean, what are you guys thinking looking in the future? What could happen?
Right. We think that, listen, again, I cannot talk more than what is on the press, but I can tell you that the future we believe is very bright. As they mentioned in their press releases, the company has a huge company, it's a major company, but it's at the end of the day, it's a secret company, and it's devoting a lot of resources to what we call the new generation product, which is the vape and some other things. So they wanted, as many others, you know, cigarette companies, they're dedicating a lot of resources to that, and they want to concentrate on that. And, you know, the premium division as a division in the company is the largest cigar company in the world, right? As a premium division, because it incorporates half of the Habanos portfolio under Habanos, and then the United States and the international business. So it is a big, but as they mentioned in their press release, this is a luxury project, right? This is a luxury product, and so we are continuing to do what we're doing, which is make better cigars, trying to make better cigars, trying to get a new experience of flavors, and with the confidence that we're doing a fantastic job, and whoever owns the company will have an amazing portfolio worldwide of brands, a unique, iconic brands, and it's a unique product. And that's why I think the company made that decision of separate it to capture that money and to use it for their purposes of expansion. And we're confident and we're happy that something that we're creating has such a great value for people that will put the money on. So we're extremely happy. We think the future is very bright, and we continue to do what we're doing. It's creating better cigars, or trying to create better cigars all the time.
No, I think that's what you get. I've been on I've been in a similar situation in my career too, and that's what you do. And in the end, they look at your core competency, whoever ends up with it, and they're going to see the value you bring. So,
oh, that's all right. I mean, that's exactly right. And you know, companies don't buy companies. Companies buy people and buy brands and assets.
Yep.
And this is a very intimate and very this is a luxury product at the end of the day, so we continue doing that, and we think the future is bright. We have an amazing factory in Dominican Republic, an amazing factory in Honduras, fantastic partners in Nicaragua, and in the international market with the Habanos portfolio and half of the Habanos portfolio. It's an amazing opportunity worldwide. Again, Asset Division is the largest cigar company in the world.
Sure, absolutely. All right. Why don't we get into what we're smoking right now? That's just want to mention Tailored Smoke, our sponsor, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter. Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. So, Aaron, you're smoking that M356-2 tonight.
Well, big memory.
Yeah, just wrap that up. Adrian M356-2. And it's got a few years of age on it, obviously. But it's done a very good job of melding the flavors together. I mean, very nice combination of the wood and the baking spice together. It just, it's almost like it's kind of one component. It's not as if it's two separate flavors that are kind of working together. It's just, it's really come together well. Very smooth. Retrohale's nice. Construction was fantastic. I didn't have to touch it up or anything at all. So it was just a fantastic cigar. I really enjoyed it. I remember when the M356 first came out, really great cigar. And then you're like, how do I get more of these cigars? Because how limited they were. And then the two comes out and you're like, okay, I got another shot at it. So it was very good to get more of those. And I've been able to, you know, put some away to be able to enjoy them as time goes on. So it's a very nice cigar. Well done by you, Rafael.
Well, thank you. And that age, they do age very well. Okay. This yes. is the tobacco that has over 9 to 10 year old tobacco by the time we release it, and obviously continue to age. I do have some connections, and I do have some of those stuff away. Actually, originally when we released that, Aaron and Will, that we kept some boxes, right? The idea was, and it was a very good idea at the time, was to separate some boxes and release it, you know, 5-10 years, right?
Oh, wow. As
soon as we got it, that we're going to do that. The problem is that we have been smoking those.
I bet.
And they're like, you know, drilling. So there's definitely, we gave up the idea of 10 years. But from the beginning, right, because we knew the tobacco had inside, we knew the opportunity for aging that cigar brought. And I have to tell you, they get better with time. And there's one size there, which is in that lineup, that is a Forte, which is a preferido size. And let me tell you, I had one. So I had it a week ago here at the beach, and I had a box been sitting here, and I thought it was empty. It was sitting in the office, and I have a lot of empty cigar boxes everywhere. And it had one cigar inside when I went to throw it away. I went to throw it away. That's when I was throwing it away. It moved something. And I opened it and had a cigar. Wow. I smoked it a week ago, and I can tell you, an amazing cigar. So we're pretty nice. Proud, pretty proud of that release. Yeah.
Nice.
Right. So I'm smoking the H Upman Hispaniola by Jose Mendez. What I'll say right off the bat, this is, you know, I hate to say this expression, this ain't your father's H Upman. Okay. This is a bolder, full flavored H Upman cigar. And you get the Andula tobacco. I taste it. But it's not offensive. It balances out. There's a sweetness to this cigar along the way that's really, really nice. And the aromas, when you retrohale the cigar, just the aromas when you put the cigar, fantastic. You know, for folks who want to, like, talk boutique cigars and all that, this is like a very boutique type of blend. Like, it's unique. It's different. And it's not something that I think it's something it can have a very wide appeal, this cigar. And I've had some mixed results with the Andulio blends. I did really like the DNA by La Aurora. This is a completely different blend, but it's a strong blend for H. Upman, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it is. And you're right. It's very boutique-ish. It's very different flavors. And that's why we thought it was good. This has become our collaboration line, which is the H. Upman first by AJ Fernandez. Then last year, we released the Connecticut one, which is by the Grupo de Maestros. And now we released this, which is by Jose Mendez, using all their tobacco. So it in effect has become a collaboration line. And so we wanted to create something different. I hate to copy. I actually had a period of time which for a year or so, I did not try any other cigar that had the cigar that had that tobacco or had some other tobacco from, whether it was from Brazil or some other type of similar fermentation process. And so we try to do something unique. And again, difficult to make, very rewarding. We had a fantastic guy in the industry that came to see me at the show and said, Rafael, this is for sure the best cigar I had. And coming from him was an amazing opportunity. I called Candela, which is the brand manager for this. I want you to hear this, because they were, you know, the office was complaining because I kept changing the blend, and we, you know, we went back to the drawing board many, many different times. And at the end, we got it when, you know, where we got it, where we wanted it. And I think it's a cigar that it has Andujo, as you mentioned, Will, but it's a broaden the aspects of it, and you see it in taste, because there are other markets, other cigars in the industry that has some different tobaccos, and you either like it or hate it, and whether it's a Kentucky, tobacco or some others, but we wanted to create to broaden the horizons of the brand. So I think hopefully, and you know, I don't go by whether it sells a lot, although it did sell very well, or not. I mean, the blend for me is, I want to be true to the flavors that I'm trying to create. Listen, if it sells, at the end of the day, it's a business and it's great. But if not, we'll smoke a lot of those cigars, because we make a lot of those cigars.
Oh, no, I can say, these I got from the trade show, and they are really smoking good. So have these hit the stores yet?
Yes, they've been shipping for the last 3 weeks.
Okay,
and we get in reorder, so that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I think this is a really, really good cigar. I'm glad
you like it, because that's what I'm smoking as well,
right? Yeah, no, that's great. All right, Rafael, you still got some time. These are gonna be shorter segments, I promise.
No, absolutely, I'm all yours. And
okay,
I appreciate it, and thank you to Novelete Sue that has been writing some comments, fantastic. And Chris said that he thought it was the Open, the U.S. Open, when he said Rafael Nadal was, and he was disappointed. So these fat guys. So I'm sorry, Chris. it's not the U.S. Open. You know, different channel.
Yeah, exactly. Got a few more weeks for that. We'll be really into that. I know a few of us will. So, all right, let's kind of take a little bit of a break for our sponsors. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was a leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Jamastran Valley of Honduras, Julio Arroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds, and in 2000, he reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the Arroa Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now with JRE Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing that authentic Corojo leaf. Tadascan offers a mild to medium cigar in both Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andreas Maduro, or Connecticut Shade that represents the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for JRE Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every drawer. And by Cornelius and Anthony, if you're going to be wanted for something, be wanted for something great. That's what Cornelius Bailey set out to do 5 generations ago, and that's what Stephen Bailey is doing with Cornelius and Anthony Cigars. Using the finest tobaccos, Cornelius and Anthony brings to you Daddy Mac, Venganza, Meridian, Cornelius, Ariel East, Senior East Sugars, and the Gent Mistress. You can find them at your local tobacconist. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Factory. Founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman, J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For 4 generations and 124 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting some of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-old cigar factory in the Ybor City National Historic Landmark District of Tampa. At this factory known as El Rahol, J.C. Newman rolls premium cigars by hand and hand-operated antique cigar machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa factory is the second largest in Nicaragua, and it's where Brickhouse, Perla del Mar, El Baton, and Quorum cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tabacalera A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With its longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans have founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. And we're going to get into our Alec Bradley Live True segment, sponsored by Alec Bradley. 500 cigars are set afire in this country every minute, a staggering statistic. Wait, that's a good thing. All those folks are relaxing with a fine cigar. The trouble is, a lot of those cigars aren't worth remembering. They're just plain forgettable. That's why you should pick up an Alec Bradley cigar. You'll taste that baby and say, mmm, I remember you, Alec Bradley. Learn more at alecbradley.com. So, Rafael, in this segment, we kind of take a little break from the cigar talk, and we talk about things that you may talk about in a cigar lounge or just in everyday life. And you're a big music guy, so I want to talk some music with you tonight.
I am. Right. By the way, I want to say hello to Carlos Yaca Toraño, who's watching, fantastic guy from the Toraño family, who's Gurkha, and Yari Gonzalez Vargas, which also joined the watch party from the Florida Gonzalez and Natty Miles and T. Michael Evans, a great supporter at Starkey Areas, is watching as well. Thank you guys and for tuning in, and just like me, that I tune out your shows all the time. So thank you to all of them.
No, it's great. You know, I want to mention Yadi. She put on one of the best events in Charlotte back in May for the folks at Tailored Smoke for their anniversary party, and it was packed, Rafael. Packed. Yeah, her cigars are really a big hit there, yeah.
A good cigar. My neighbor. Fantastic people.
No, exactly.
Also, Rich from our company, and Richie Ivanik, that is watching as well. Saw him in the office today, or the key account manager. So fantastic. Thank you, Rich, for tuning in. It's very late for him. Normally go to sleep at 9 p.m. So
we appreciate it. Yeah, we appreciate it. We have the show later because of the West Coast, and Aaron's from the West Coast. But we do – people, we're really grateful on the East Coast that they're up still.
Hey, I haven't eaten it yet. So I will – I follow the Spanish – the Spanish schedule, so I normally eat about 10 to 11, and I normally walk a little bit after that, so I am, I am in my regular schedule.
Yeah, well, it's fine. My son, Timothy, we have a refrigerator across from the studio here, second refrigerator. He usually raids that refrigerator around 11:45, so I'm expecting that to happen any minute right now. So you're a music fan, Rafael. Now, we know your love of opera. Right?
Yes.
How did you get it? Okay, let's ask the question first. How did you kind of get into opera? And you're a big opera guy.
I am. And I started in music. I was 6 years old in Cuba. Actually, someone gave me for what is considered similar to to Christmas here. We celebrate in Spanish country the Tres Reyes Magos, the Three Wise Kings, in January 5th. So someone gave me, when I was 5 years old, they gave me a little drum set, right? And I 5 years old, I was making my mom miserable with those sounds. And I went to the music school and I said, I want to play drums. And they say, 6 years old at the time, they say, no, drum is a capitalist instrument. Rock and roll, by the way, at the time you couldn't listen to rock and roll in Cuba. It was forbidden, and they put you in jail if you were listening to rock and roll. So they told me you want to study violin, and I said sure. I had no idea what violin said. They said no, that is an instrument from the people. I mean, not in Cuba, but, So I started playing violin when I was 6, and my mom says, you pick violin, you need to finish. And I didn't know what I was getting into. She would try to hit me if I didn't study every day. And so I started, no one in my family, really didn't like classical music. But a violin is a classical instrument, and I started on that. Then when I came to New York from Cuba in 1980, I came to live in New York City. I went to music school, and I had a passage for $1. I could go to the opera and in Metropolitan and at the Met. And, there's not many places you can go for $1. So I will spend a lot of time in the opera, and I start feeling all these things, the powerful music and that, and I really got into opera. So when I moved to Miami and I couldn't find a job, and I started my own opera group because there's no classical music in Miami whatsoever back in 1983. Now we have a fantastic opera group That if it happened at the time, I would be, you know, a musician still now instead of a cigar guy. So so I started my opera group. No one went to the concert, so that did not work. But I felt my love for the opera continue, you know. So I said, Mar, you may remember I introduced a cigar called La Bohème.
Yep.
One of my all time favorite operas from Verdi. And I liked all type of music. You know, so I listen a lot of jazz, a lot of old school rock and rock and roll. And you know, this is the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, which is an amazing event that brought the music, you know, from the 60s to the 70s. And so I like all type of music. But in New York, in addition to the opera and the classical music, I found a little place that I've been going for some 35 years now, the Blue Note down in downtown.
And yep, I know it well.
Great jazz places. I go whenever I can go visit, it's an amazing opportunity. So I like all type of music, and obviously, you know, being Cuban, Latin music, and the salsa and the merengue, the Dominican. So I like all type of music.
What's some of the, like, if on your playlist right now, some of the more modern music, or some of the, I'll say modern from 60s on, what are some of the bands and songs you may have on your playlist right now?
I have to tell you, first of all, whenever you talk about playlists, I have a bunch of CDs, right?
I still use CDs, by the way, too, just so you know.
Yeah. So I have, you know, playlists that, you know, it's new to me. But lately I've been getting into country music, right?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I first got exposed to country music. We did a cigar for a guy from Texas called Kinky
Freeman. Oh, I forgot it. That's right. Yes, you right. Remember that cigar.
Right. So Kinky is a guy from Texas. He's a Jew making country music in Texas. And then he introduced me to the music. He was a very good friend of Willie Nelson. And I started getting that. So I recently been listening to a lot of, I'm not good with the names, but I was listening to The Voice, not, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I started really getting into country music, and that's something that I listen a lot to it right now. So, but my wife hates me because I have like 10 CDs that I play every single night. As a matter of fact, in my car, in one of the cars, I have one CD that I had it for 2 years. And every time I get into the car, the CD start playing. It's a Spanish group and from Mexico. And my wife says, can you change that CD? And I don't know how to change it. It's the same CD for 2 years has been there. So, you know, so no playlist for me yet. I'm learning about the computers and things. So I recently brought a little device that connects Bluetooth to my old stereo, right? Because, you know, I got these old Bose systems and it's all these things, but they're all CD bases, man.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. The now one of your sons, Carlos, right?
Mm. The music one?
Yes, he was
Michael,
in the music.
I'm sorry.
Yes, you're correct.
Yeah. Marco, he goes by the name of Infamous, so you know his name is Infamous.
Right.
He's Infamous. So yeah, it's funny because he's my stepson. So when he finished high school, he said, "That's it, mommy, I'm not going to college." And my wife, being a psychiatrist, you know, study all her life medicine, and it's, you know, a profession that takes a lot of studies. And he said, no, I want to go into music. And he started as a DJ. And then, but he's also very entrepreneurial. So he started his own magazine called Tablets. Then he sold it later on. And then he started doing all these bits for different people on the studios. And one guy told him, hey, you know, he's interested in his bits. You know, normally they will buy the bits from them. It was some good money, but he said, no, I want to get the credits. And the guy was Lil Wayne, and he started producing for him and putting the bits for Carter 4 was the first release. and Carter Five, and then some others, and then work with another guy who ended up working with forgot the name right now, but it became very successful, and Bruno Mars. And so he continued the music. He's created fantastic music, an amazing guy. Self-learned the piano, the guitar, the bass, and he's a great producer right now. Got a Grammy.
Yes.
Very nice.
So it's a success story because it shows when you want to do what you want to do and you have a dream and you continue. He also did not want to move from Miami, so got all this fantastic name coming to work with him here because he now wanted move to LA where Epicenter was, and Miami now is a mega place for music, but it wasn't many years ago. But he likes the hometown, and so he's been able to create some great music, and I'm extremely proud of that. So yeah, got it on the family. Although I have to tell you, the rap thing was something that I was very happy. And I remember he was working in a song. It goes like, "I want to be a billionaire," so
right,
freaking bad. And I listened to that for about a year before it came into the market and to the radio. And then I had to listen it to the radio all the time. Yeah, Travis McCoy, a guy that he did it for, and then Travis McCoy invited Bruno Mars and became very successful. That song, I think he still gets residual money every quarter from that. So it's a great, great thing, you know. But rap, I wasn't a big fan. I'm still not.
I'm not either.
No, that's one of the things that I am not. But I can tell you, has a great follower. Everywhere you go in the world, you hear this type of they have, they call it hip hop now. So it's a little bit more. But it's a fantastic way of getting to the music and being very successful.
No, that's very true. I've complained about the hip hop music at IPCPR, not because I hate it. I don't really hate it, but it's hard to talk sometimes.
Well,
because background music's different than hip hop, is what I tell people.
Our booth was right next to Drew Estate.
I know.
So yeah, I know what you're saying.
I went to Eddie. Eddie, could you put the Spotify list on here?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. I've really lately getting into Brazilian music. There's some really good artists out of Brazil that you just don't hear about here, and it's fantastic music that comes out of there.
No, absolutely. And listen, being in Miami, the great things, in the building that I am now, I have a lot of Brazilian friends and neighbors, and we got Russian, we got people, it's like the United Nations.
Yeah.
But you get exposed to many different things, and
yeah,
still has some amazing music.
Yeah.
Jazz and the bossa nova, these mm-hmm. things, and it's, I have to tell you, very relaxing. You put the in this case the CDs, and you're smoking a cigar by the beach with the Brazilian music, and it's an amazing, and the voice also is so romantic,
Yeah, it really is too. I've gotten into it, and there's some older artists from Brazil I really like, Jose Bonjour, things like that.
I saw him a long time ago. I support a company or a foundation called Rhythm Foundation that brings people from Brazil, from Haiti, from different type of music, from Spain, different type of music that are popular, right? That will not have the chance to come to a regular concert, and we support that, and it brings some amazing Brazilian people, that singers and musicians, a fantastic history of music there.
Yeah. No, very true. Very true. It's like I said, I just really have discovered that recently, and it's just kind of interesting.
And being Cuban, Cuba has an amazing history of music, right? So we have things like mambo, like salsa, like the son, like the bolero, like the cha-cha-cha, which, the American called cha-cha, so you get all these type of rhythms that are unique to Cuba, and then, expand into the world. So, Cuba has music, cigars, coffee, rum, and you know, and I marry a Cuban woman, so I can tell you, you know, that's also a very good part of the
yeah. You know, when I went to Cuba, I was right. We were staying at a I guess what it would be an Airbnb. Well, we weren't. We were staying on the we were staying on the Malecón, but our group was split, and there was a group that we were on the Malecón. The other group was at the Miramar district, and that's right by where the Casa de la Música is. And we were like that. Their house was right across the street from it. It was packed. I could tell you, packed every night. Yeah.
The music in Cuba is amazing.
Yeah, it was really, really good to see. Yeah. And then, you know, I'll say also the last thing I'll say is, you know, I miss your piano at IPCPR. I remember when you were playing piano at IPCPR years ago.
I couldn't bring it because my sales went down that year. I spent most of my time. And I couldn't sell. So, you know, Hank asked me, please do not ever bring the piano.
I was wondering how much that was going to cost. Like,
yeah, it cost a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. But at 2 years ago at the TAA, you know, when I joined Alto, so we did in Altos de Chabón in Casa de Campo. So we did a dinner. Alta just did a dinner, and I in room I sponsor a before the dinner a little cocktail, and we got a piano that was the original piano that was inaugurated the hotel and the Altos de Chabón when Frank Sinatra went. So they had this piano. Wow. They bought this piano for Frank Sinatra. It doesn't use it a lot, so they tune it. They got it working perfectly for me that evening. And that was an amazing, so much history playing this piano where you know that Sinatra was touching the hand. You know, I had all these ideas of him singing with the hand like that. But I'm not really into the old music, you know. I recently saw Polanka, and then last year I saw Bennett, Tony Bennett. I really enjoy some of the old singers. And I don't know how many years ago, the IPCPR, I took my kids. I don't remember who the singer was. But it was one of the very old singers. I was singing there and standing, and my son, Papi, sit down. I'm into the very old. I'm an old soul, actually.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's all. I like that. I mean, I grew up, we grew up in an Italian household, and on Saturday nights, the radio station played Saturday with Sinatra, and we listened to it every Saturday. I hated it as a kid. I hated it because every Saturday we had, but now I love Sinatra, so.
Yeah, no, we get old, and you know, what happened is this music is something that it just doesn't get old, right? And then when you start getting old yourself, then you see the music has a, and the song has all these words and meanings and history and story that, you know, some of the new music, I have to tell you, it doesn't have it, you know?
Yeah.
They can repeat the same thing for 6 minutes. It's, you know, it's another story. And listen, for me, cigars is as a music and everything. It's about the stories, about the experience. And that's why I like some of this old music.
Oh, very good. Aaron, anything else you want to hear on music?
No, I think we're good.
All right, we're going to do one more segment, Raphael. A segment sponsored by Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Master Blender Steve Saka set out to create Puroso Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saka's closely held values and attests in three simple words everything Saka wanted to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Saka, they're a way of life. As for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagard, Muestra de Saka, Todos los Días, and Sin Compromiso at your local tobacconist. And by M. Bombay Cigars. M. Bombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They represent the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. M. Bombay Cigars are then rolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our cigar industry. Try M. Bombay, Gaia, and the M. Cuba line. M. Bombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And by Caldwell Cigar Company. Caldwell Cigar Company launched in 2014 with a very simple mantra, create, innovate, ambition. Since day one, they have done things differently. They have challenged the industry norms to produce sticks that time and time again deliver on that promise. Look for Caldwell products or any number of their collaborations at your local retailer today. and by Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has four generations of experience in cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for many industry leaders out of their Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. Now the Cuevas family brings their very own brand to market with Casa Cuevas Cigars. Try Casa Cuevas Connecticut, Casa Cuevas Habano, and the Casa Cuevas Maduro, as well as the Prensado and limited edition Flaco line extensions. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retailer for Casa Cuevas Cigars. Casa Cuevas Cigars, from our casa to yours. And I want to mention my Cattle Baron meat moment of the week. If you didn't see, I grilled up some burgers last night. And I brought out the Lars Teton spices again. I'm telling you, that Lars Teton spice, his cigars are unique, but his spices are also equally unique. I'll just tell you, that burger was just fantastic.
Nice.
And next week we will be doing our IPCPR over unders with the media panel. So we'll have a few, you know, we'll have a few results from that. I'll say, I think people know what my meat. Rafael, I consumed a lot of meat at IPCPR this year.
Well, I have to tell you, you're not with the time, because right now you cannot eat meat. You know, it's funny. I couldn't eat meat in Cuba, and now I get here and they say, no, it's, you know, the cows and this and that. I don't understand
it. I tell you what, no, I had to go for blood work when I came back because I'm still, you know, because I had the blood infection. They checked me. And my triglycerides spiked up for one blood test because of that. So I was telling, it was like, what did, and they knew it was out of the norm. They said, what were you doing? I said, well, I was eating a lot of meat in Vegas. I said, yeah, that would do it.
No, that's, and then, you know, I used to work in the lab, and you can see on the blood when they do the separation of the blood and the serum, and you can see it, you know, it's like fat. I mean,
I went the day after I got back, so it was really close still. Yeah.
By the way, I also want to say Karen Berger just joined us, and Karen from Karen Berger Cigar, unbelievable lady from Nicaragua, and Nick, you say come over for some late dinners and Macallan Rare Cask. I have to tell you, I bought by mistake a few bottles on Christmas of Macallan Rare Cask. I went to Costco and I went to buy a few bottles to get to my brother's in-law. And I saw a sign, $79. I said, you know, it's just fine, you know. So I bought a few bottles. And then when I got the bill, these were like $300 bottles. And I said, I'm not giving this to my brothers-in-law. I get it. And I kept them. And I've been drinking this. It's Macallan Rare Cask. Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I got well so for, with the cigar. I'm expanding from the rum. You know, I'm a rum guy. But I'm getting to bourbon and new experiences. Last night I had a full bottle of sake. My wife was all destroyed today. I got a bottle of sake. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I like sake. I do like it.
I'm expanding my horizon. It's really. And by the way, when you pair cigars with these, are unique new flavors, right? So it's new experiences.
It's great. So Rafael, this is our deliberation segment where we talk about some industry topics, and there's a few things we wanted to ask you about tonight. And I think we're asking all of our guests, and you kind of hit on it a little earlier. Obviously, a lot of news out of IPCPR now with the rebranding of PCA, potentially Cigar Con coming next year. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have to tell you, first for me, I am very mad because it took me so many years to learn the IPCPR thing from the RPA. and now another thing, except this one is a little bit more PCA, you know, that type of stuff is a little bit. By the way, hello to Ana Jose Gonzalez from Nicaragua, fantastic lady from Naxa Cigars.
A lot of industry people on tonight, yeah.
A lot of industry.
Yeah.
So that's good. And Alan saying that he wants a good mojito. I do make some mean mojitos, and I must say. But, you know, in the PCA, listen, it's a difficult thing because when I joined the industry and I became part of the advisory board, the RTD at the time, and later the IPCPR, I knew from the beginning that it needed some changes, right? It needed to adapt to the times, and the times are changing. So it needed time. I'm not sure that this is a correct change, and I'm not sure that is what it needs to be done. I understand the difficulties that they're going through, I spoke to a lot of them. We all agree. I saw your show, the media show, and I can tell you that we all agree that that it might not have been done in the correct way. I was listening to Kiss My Ass the other day, and you know, you guys were discussing that, and they should have used the media. They should have different channels and to take this and to do it in the right way. I'm not really happy about the consumer day, personally or as a company. We love consumer events. We love to talk to the consumers directly. We love to be able to tell them about the cigar, but there's a time and place for everything. And we're not sure that that may be the place and time to do it. As we also go there, it's our time to the industry celebrates together our uniqueness and our lifestyles and our way of it. I see why they're trying to expand and they're trying to do some other things, but I'm not sure that might necessarily be what it needs to be. Time will tell. It's a lot of people are mad. One, the way it was done, we all agree. I think we can all agree that it was done in a very different way, perhaps not the right way. And also using the industry partners, you know, people like you that can help take the word out. And one thing is, you know, I come from Cuba, from a communist country, dictatorship, and you do because they tell you to do it, you have to do it. But I learned that you have to work with your people to come and discuss ideas and move forward in a way that everybody buys into idea. All the stakeholders need to buy into the idea. So although I see that the organization need to do something to make the show more interest, their way of doing it, but this perhaps, if not, I believe it might not be the right way.
Do you think that, I mean, this, I made this point with Alan last week. Do you think that this is a very divisive issue?
It is.
And I guess I'm going to know the answer. Introducing something like this radical is not something that's, I felt, going to be bringing the industry together when we need to come together.
Well, you see, there's no doubt that the show needs to be needs some excitement, and we need to bring a value to people like us, companies that when I was very small, we spent a lot of money that we didn't have. Now that we are a bigger company, we spend a lot of money to do this, to bring the industry together. But perhaps the idea of doing something to make the show more viable, I don't see how this might make the industry or the show more viable. At the end of the day, it needs to bring more retailers, it needs to be more interesting, it needs to be more value for companies like ours that spend a lot of money to go there. You know, companies like ours, we visit most of the cigar stores, and still we go there and we feel part of a very dynamic industry, and we love the opportunity of very small people go and have a table and start, because a lot of those people that are big now started very small, right? So we celebrate that, and I think it's an opportunity to everybody have an opportunity to show the new products and make the industry excitement. I mean, just the list of people that you have mentioned in this advertising, from Casa Cuevas to, you know, Robert Carwell, and, you know, all these people are very interesting people that bring dynamic to our industry, you know, and it brings a value to that. But we need to do something to make the show more viable, and perhaps, I'm not sure that this is it. It's not only divisive, but it's divisive. Not because, I mean, bring consumer now. We all love the consumer. At the end of the day, everything we do is for the consumer, right? If everything we do is, you know, it doesn't stop until it gets to the consumer. But there are different times and places for everything. We want to have an event where the consumers go. That's what we have. Right there, we are concentrated in telling our retail partners retailer partners and the media and things like that are new products, and it's difficult to do both. It's very difficult. I'm not sure how it might be able to be done.
You know, I'm gonna kind of compliment your company, because I go to the Great Smoke every year, which is a big consumer event based in South Florida. And every year when Altidus is there, you guys bring the whole team out there. I mean, everyone from Rob Norris to you to, you know, Eddie. I mean, you have a full team out there. And I could tell you, there was great interaction for consumers, where that I thought was a great model for how the big companies can do it. I'm not knocking the big companies, but I'm saying you guys are doing it very well. I think you guys are better than probably any company I've seen do that. It's just you created a very good experience at that event every year.
Well, and we participate in many events throughout the nation. And you mentioned one is important to us because it's in our backyard.
Yeah.
It's one that is one of our great partners. And we love the opportunity to meet with the consumers and have direct access to the consumer. So we do these things, we bring everybody, we wanted to give the attention that the consumer deserves, right? And that's why we do that. And I think you're right, I think it's a model for everybody to follow, instead of just going there and give a cigar. I don't give a cigar. I want everybody to know what we are doing and what we're doing and things like that. However, when you are, you know, at the show, that's a different opportunity. Okay, maybe Halloween week they want to do something and you come and you prepare, or, you know, that's why we do the Big Smokes Las Vegas. That's why we do the other events around the nation, which are important. And many of them are sponsored by retailers, which has a different flavor. You know, we do the Texas Cigar Fest. We do the Cigar International Cigar Fest, you name it, we do it. And it's a great opportunity. We want every opportunity there is to get to the consumer, to connect with the consumer. We want them to know what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that is not the place. That's the place to go and do some business and give the attention and give the time that the retailer deserves. Because at the end of the day, we want to educate them about the type of product and why we're doing it. This year, for example, we talk a little bit about the different releases, and they're all unique, and they have certain tobaccos. And this is a great opportunity to connect with them and tell them why we're doing, why the Henry Clay that have been traditionally a broadleaf tobacco, we are using it as a binder. And they said, you know, it brings a new level of complexity and flavor profile that we didn't have before. So we need the time, because the retailers are working every day extremely hard to get to the consumer the best product they can. And that's why we wanted to compete on that. So, you know, it's, although we love the consumer, we love, and that's why we're doing things like this tonight. But at the end of the day, that's not a necessary place for that, I believe.
No, I think we all agree that there's a lot of challenges with that. You know, I also wanted to point out, I know you missed it, Raphael, and I know Aaron also missed it, but the media party you guys did this year, was
very good.
You guys missed a really good one. It was really good because not only did you treated us great, we had a lot of really good time to spend with everyone from the team. Before the trade show, and then obviously we got to go through the trade show and see the products, and the displays. But there was a lot you were able to accomplish that night before, and you know, we were trying your cigars that night, and it was I thought it was a really one of the better media events we've had. That, you know, we talked about the Alec Brawley one last week. The Altus one shouldn't be forgotten about either. But so you guys missed a good one, I'll tell you that.
Well, I appreciate that, because you know me since Boutique Blends days, and having our booth try to always separate the time for the media, because I have a lot of respect for what you guys do. Listen, Aaron, you spending their nights here doing this, recapping all the new product. I've been watching you guys recap the IPCPR show. For us as an industry, it's an amazing tool, right? Because we go and we see it, but sometimes we can't get all of them. But, you know, you do an amazing job, so it's a way to also give you the time And, you know, in also in a celebratory way, that I couldn't do it as a person, a small company, as a dinner, right? But we do have the resources now, so that's why the company did it, and it was a way to connect to you guys that see, listen, we are here, we're a big company, right? And there are a lot of different faces, and they're you know, it's a very unique company. But at the end of the day, we want you to know that we're working extremely hard, as any other company, to make the best cigar we can. And the way to tell you and have the time in a relaxed way to tell you. And that's it. That's an important. And that's what the show it is supposed to be about. Not only a celebration of our lifestyle and our industry and our success and difficulties, sticking together, but at the end of the day, it's an opportunity to catch up with all of us that sometimes we only have time to Facebook or to places like this, you know?
Yeah. So, Rafi, let me ask a question on that. If there was a scenario where maybe next year online media couldn't go to the trade show, what would you think of that?
Oh, that
yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense because, you know, we're on this together, right? So we all have a purpose. This is like the circle of life, right? So we have all different things. We advertise on magazines, and magazines reach certain people and certain audience. You reach other people. You help us to take the word out. And it is all part of the group that makes this industry, right? I think that would be a mistake if that happened. I think you know, it's you are as important that any other particular medium to get the word out to connect with the consumers. You know? So no, I don't think that that's not even fair, but it's not a good business thing. Because I can tell you, look, and you spend, how long did it take you, you know, last year and this year, you travel and we know about your history going, and then you do a little party there, you took, Skip Martin was there. You know, this is a celebratory moment, right? So this is all, and you are taking, you know, doing a fantastic job of taking the word out, right? Of what is happening, what the industry is, what the show is. And, It's one of the few events that consumers say, hey, what did you put out for the IPCPR, right? How do they know about the IPCPR? Because people like you, you know, people at the stores, you know, so everybody has their role, right? And it's a sacrifice that you do, you know, and you do it because you want to bring your consumers the most up to date. And by the way, guys, I don't know how you do this, right? It's an amazing job, and obviously we talk. You're not doing it to get rich because trust me, I know it doesn't pay. Right. At that time, if you add, I mean, you know, you have jobs that allow you to do this, and that's fantastic. But if you have all the hours, right, that you spend doing, you'll be making more money even if it's at $10 an hour by doing some other stuff. But if you do it with love and dedication for the industry. And now I don't see, frankly, I don't see a scenario where that can happen. Eh?
We hope not. Yeah, we hope not. Because like I said, it's very valuable to us too. And it was a controversial show this year. But you know what? You said it, Rafael. There was a lot of good stuff that came out of the show this year. I mean, we just talked about all the releases you guys had. By the way, I'm smoking this. This bin number 2 is amazing. It's really good. So
I'm glad you like it.
I'm enjoying it a lot. Yeah,
I'm glad you like it. But yeah. So it was a controversial show. I think it was many different things. These things, so the way they roll out the name, they roll out the vision, they roll out this. And again, I believe in selling out the idea to all the stakeholders. Mm-hmm. Which includes the retailers, includes the media, includes us as a manufacturer, that we're spending a lot of money, and we all have to be on this together. We all have to decide where we're going and what we're doing, and we are on this together.
Very true.
Yeah. Aaron, any more on those topics, Aaron? Did we?
I don't think so.
Okay, I got one more. So
let me just add that a lot of this is my own view, doesn't represent the view of the company. I need a legal disclaimer, right? Yes.
That's true. It's true. And that's why you could talk as much or as little as you want, but that's fine. That's your opinion.
Yeah, it is my opinion and doesn't necessarily
reflect. All the opinions we give don't reflect you guys either. So
don't reflect the your advertisers or my company.
No, exactly. I got in enough trouble this year already, so I don't want to get you into trouble.
That's all I need.
Yeah, no, all good. This one's not as kind of controversial, but you know, over the years, Rafi, I think one thing that you've done is you've connected with people on social media, going back to the old Varos days and Aging Room days. There are some new things coming now with the leading platforms on social media, which are Facebook and Instagram, where there's some restrictions right now. I just wanted to get some thoughts of that and maybe how a company like Altidus is looking at that right now. Because you guys are embracing social media more and more, I'm seeing right now as a company. But these things could be very catastrophic. So I want to get some thoughts from you on that.
You know, it's a difficult state of affair for a country, right? Where now, you know, a product that is created for an adult with adult consumer, you have this difficulty getting the word out. We have proven that kids don't smoke this and that, and they're treating us just like they treat any other type of cigarette smoking or any of these things. I embrace that as a method of connecting to the people. I went to events like yours, right? When I met you many years ago in North Carolina.
Yep.
And whether I go to Russia or I go to France or Spain, and I connect with these people, and it's a way to continue that relationship. I go to countries like Russia and Moscow, and I have friends that call me. I went to a vacation to southern part of Spain, and I'm posted. I'm there, and they hey, can we stop by? And we love this Aging Room, and this is in Spain. So this for us is a way to connect. As a matter of fact, in my channels, I don't talk politics. I don't talk anything, or I try not to, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of division. There's a lot of things that we can all have. And for me, the cigar is a way to bring people together. Right. And it's a very difficult thing when you have a social platform that should be a canvas, right? That you people talk. And now, well, it will be another way of, Big Brothers, not even no longer the government, but mandated. And now it's cigars. Tomorrow can be drinks, spirits. The other day it seems to be that it's okay unless it's marijuana. It's that is fine. Medical issue. And I have to tell you, the original people here in America smoked this as a medicine thing. So maybe we need to reclaim that. But the thing is, we as a society, I come from a communist country where the government dictated what you wanted to watch, where the government dictated what you said, how you think, or what you like, or what you could drink and eat. And at a form like this that brought the world together, right? And it was a way for you to communicate and express idea. For me, that came to this country in a little boat looking for freedom and opportunity. It's very difficult to see how people take this and, okay, well, you know, okay, we'll move on. We cannot discuss it here. We'll move on. Every day, first the government taking our little rights, right? Every day, a little bit at a time. New York City, you couldn't smoke. I remember being in the Times Square. It was like 6 in the morning. Go out to smoke a cigar. There was nobody at 6 o'clock in the morning in Times Square. There was a lady in the other corner, like 3 blocks, across. Saw me with a cigar, which I had not even lighted up. Not even lighted up yet. I was just holding a cigar and enjoying some cold draws. And she was starting. across the street from me. And it's amazing. Now, Later on, we had the Naked Cowboy, right? And the Brazilian girls looking there and things like that. And that was okay. Naked is okay. But a cigar, that it doesn't matter you that. So we have to deal every day with this. And now, in a platform that is supposedly open up communication, open all the freedom and ability of people connect and discuss whatever things you wanted, whether it's, you know, save animals or whatever you wanted. And now we also have to deal with this. Yeah, it is for me, hard to believe that now you don't only need to be politically correct. The government is telling you what to think or not to think. But now also in a hobby that is an adult, you know, we discuss and we love to share ideas and things about our thing. But at the end of the day, it's I don't understand it. And we shouldn't take it. We shouldn't take for granted how they're taking away everything. Not only now the government, but independent governments, independent companies serving as a reviewer of what is acceptable or not acceptable in life. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. And I can tell you the other thing, just on New York, it is very hard to have a cigar now in New York. And you get into the winter months, book your hotel near the Casa de Monte Cristo or Nat Sherman is what I'll just tell you.
Absolutely.
And you know, the Casa de Monte Cristo is open late, so that's a good move is what I'll just tell you.
It is a very difficult thing. Now, platform are doing the same thing.
Yeah, DoubleTree on Lexington Avenue. You can get the cigar in very quickly.
You're right. Very, very close to Second Avenue.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Alicia, I just want to say to a fantastic friend of mine, and it works in Vegas for our company, Tommy, we call it Tommy at Vegas, and it's a, why don't you tell the story of the Coke and the apple? That's for another time, Tommy, for another time. Because I mentioned when I came from Cuba in the boat. So, yeah, he's mentioning that. You see, this is a fantastic way of staying in touch, right, with people that we love and we don't see each other. And and the cigars bring us together. You know, the cigar shops are laboratory of democracy. You go to a cigar shop and you can have a blue-collar employee. You can have a doctor. You can have a mechanic. You can have a politician. Everyone is smoking a cigar. You can discuss the most difficult things in life, but with a cigar, everything all of the way sounds, you know, respectable. You hear opinions, even if they're difficult, especially in this type of politics. But they first wanted to take that away, and now platform like this, which is a way to communicate. Amazing.
Very good. Very good. All right, Raphael, definitely want to thank you for your time. Before we kind of let you go, I just want to mention next week's show, episode 106.
Six,
106 will be a media panel show. We have two media panel members confirmed already, Ben Lee and Master Sensei. I don't think we're going to be going down the cigar counter route next week.
No.
So I think we're going to try to get away from that, but there's other things we want to talk about. So we'll be doing the over-unders that we did before IPCBR. I think we'll do, Aaron, we can maybe have those guys guess how some of those came out too.
There you go.
I got to compile the results, so I have to go back and actually do the final compilations. I think I have all the numbers. Do you have your cigar count, by the way, from the house? I got mine.
No, I may have to go back and –
I did a pretty close estimate, so I think I'll be good, so we'll do that. So, but Raphael, we want to thank you very, very much. I know we kept you a while, and we do appreciate your time. And like I said, we look forward to having you back for sure.
No, thank you very much, Will, and thank you, Aaron, for taking time and having me on. I enjoy this. It's, you know, it's a conversation with friends, and I give you most the opportunity to tell your listeners and viewers about our company, our products, our dreams, our difficulties, our journey. And at the end of the day, when you smoke a cigar, today, these days, it's not just a cigar. It's like the psychiatrist said, but it's actually more. It's a sign of freedom. It's a sign of friendship. It's a sign of many things that that brings us together. And in these very difficult times, where there's so many difficult things that are bringing us, separating us, cigars and shows like this bring us together. So thank you very much for the opportunity, guys. Eh?
Thank you, Rafael. Appreciate it. That's going to wrap up Primetime episode 105 Into the Annals of History for Thursday, August 8th, 2019. Now August 9th, 2019 on the East Coast. We'll see everybody next week. Have a great night, everybody.
See you guys.
Cheers.